When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Pod Save the Queen!
Hello and welcome to Pod Save the Queen. I'm Zoe Forsey, Mirror Online Features Editor, and I'm your host for this week's show. So today we're going to learn a little bit more about Sophie, the Countess of Wessex. In recent months, we've seen a lot more of Prince Edward's wife as she stepped in to fill some of the gaps left by other senior members of the royal family. She's a really popular member of the family, and she's extremely close with the Queen, and she's good pals with the Duchess of Cambridge. But her stepping more into the spotlight has meant that we've also had the opportunity to learn a lot more about her charity work. So today I'm joined by Monica Smith and Olivia Kierno, who are from the sight loss charity, the Vision Foundation. So hello and welcome.
Hello, hi.
Thank you so much for joining us today. So to introduce you guys properly, so Olivia, you're the charity's CEO. And Monica, you work at the charity, but you also had the opportunity to join Sophie on a tandem bike ride earlier this year.
Yes, I did. Very excited.
Now, sharing a bike with a member of the royal family isn't something many people can say. So I'm really looking forward to hearing more about that later on. But firstly, Olivia, are you all right to tell us a little bit more about Sophie's role at the charity and how she got involved?
Absolutely. So Sophie is our royal patron. She got involved in 2003, taking over a royal patronage from the Queen Mother, actually, at that point. And she's since then been an extraordinary champion, shining kind of this really phenomenal spotlight on sight loss issues. She's also got a personal connection. You may be aware that her daughter, Lady Louise Windsor, had a sight issue, which required some operations in her childhood. So I think that's probably also brought sight impairment to life for the Countess. And I guess the last piece is that she's been involved with us, but she's been involved with national and other international sight loss charities. She's also a real champion of disability inclusion. And a couple of years ago, spoke just so brilliantly and beautifully about inclusion as part of a big campaign called the Valuable 500, which is all about getting disabled people into employment. So this is clearly a cause that's very close to her heart.
So can you just tell us briefly what does a royal patronage is? What does that mean?
It varies so much. So some royal patronage will mean that, you know, you might have an attendance once every few years at a special event. And sometimes I think when a cause is really, really close to a person's heart, they become even more involved. So for us, the Countess of Wessex has done everything from, you know, hosting royal galas and gala dinners through to much more kind of down to earth, opening our high street shops. We have a chain of charity shops. So she's been involved in opening our shops. But the part that it's clear she enjoys the most is actually connecting with the front line, connecting with the cause. So during lockdown, we had the opportunity to get together with some visually impaired people and her, just in a really intimate conversation on Zoom, talking about the impact of lockdown for blind people. And I think what came through then, as always, with the Countess of Wessex, was her extraordinary kind of humanity and genuine interest in people. So that was very powerful. I mean, one of the maybe most unusual things that she has done for us as royal patron, because it was the first ever for any royal, was that she sat for a live sculpting event. So a sculptor sculpted her in clay. And I was so ignorant about the process. I was like, will she be touching the Countess's face? Will the face be clay? How does this work? But no, she just taking a series of measurements and then forming a clay bust of the Countess. And we did that again under lockdown, but we did it live to an audience, which was fantastic. And that, what's so special about that is, while she's been the champion of sight loss charities, most of those organizations' users and clients will never have seen her. So what we've done is produced a piece of tactile art. So we've got the clay bust was turned into a bronze bust, which we're actually unveiling next month, but it will be the first time that so many people who have connected with the Countess will be able to actually know a bit more about what she looks like. So I'm really excited to have that piece of tactile, accessible art made.
That's such a good idea. And yeah, like I said, something so different for a member of the royal family. So how long did that take? How long does it take to kind of get all the measurements and things? And thankfully, the purple person didn't have to feel her face.
Well, usually, you know, sculpting a clay bust would take a very long time. The sculptress in question is a woman, Lady Petchy, or Frances Siegelman, who does this. So she does these kind of high speed, live sculpting events, and so she managed to do it. Monica might jump in and correct me, but I believe she did it in about an hour and a half, having taken some photos, done a lot of sketching and some initial measurements. She was then able to do this piece at that speed, which is phenomenal, and the piece is absolutely beautiful.
Oh, wow, that sounds brilliant. So it sounds like she's really up for getting involved in more, not, you know, she's not just kind of a traditional, you know, planting a tree, cutting a ribbon thing. She's getting really involved in the different day-to-day stuff.
Definitely.
Sorry,
go ahead, Monica.
No, I was going to say, it sounds like she likes to do unusual things, like the sculpture, like the tandem event. It's something a little bit different to just cutting a ribbon. So that's how we try to get her involved more.
Definitely. So whenever we liaise with the Countess's team, they are keen for us to really think about how, first of all, how we can bring her closer to the work itself, but also how her unique spotlight can kind of move our objectives forwards. So turning then to the tandem bike ride that we did with the Countess, a bit more of an unusual one. We were quite nervous. It was in July, and we asked the Countess to, first of all, she was going to come to essentially a project visit to learn about tandem cycling. A lot of blind and partially sighted people hugely enjoy cycling, and the way it works is that a sighted pilot steers, but the power comes from a visually impaired stoker. And so that event was going to be quite light touch because it was locked down. We thought we could only have six people. We then had a report that we needed to launch called See My Skills, which is all about sight loss unemployment. And we kind of brought the two together by saying, look, this is really about what can happen when sighted and blind people work in tandem to break the cycle of sight loss unemployment. And those stats are shocking. And the Countess was all for the puns and the connection, but ultimately was also really, really game to get on the back of a bike. And that's exactly the kind of thing that she wants to be doing. And of course, Monica was the power behind her on that.
Yeah, so Monica, how did you get involved?
So as you explained earlier, I do actually work for the Vision Foundation as the Centenary Appeal Manager. We've got this appeal this year to raise £1 million to get people like myself into employment, because only one out of every 10 blind people is in work. So for every sort of one of me that has been working throughout my life, there's another 9 blind people who don't work. So obviously I work for the charity, but I'm also an avid tandem rider. I've been riding a tandem now for the last 20 years, which it's, you know, the first time I got on a tandem, I just couldn't believe the freedom that it gives you to be out and about, to smell the fresh air, to feel the wind in your face, and just to get out and enjoy the countryside. So when we decided that we were going to have this tandem event, I sort of stuck my hand up very, very high and said, please, I'd love to do this. I've got my own tandem. So luckily I was chosen to actually ride the tandem with the Countess. So what we did is that we asked her if she'd like a sort of one-to-one lesson, because riding a tandem is fairly straightforward, but obviously we didn't want her to feel nervous or apprehensive. So we actually I took my tandem to Bagshot Park the day before the event, so which was very exciting. So I've actually been there, and it was I was a bit apprehensive, thinking, oh my goodness, I'm going to a royal venue, and how nerve-wracking, but it was so relaxed. It was a beautiful sunny morning. We arrived, we took the tandem out of the car and sort of set it up, and we're sort of just chatting there in the drive. And then the Countess sort of joined us, and it was just like a friend had joined us, and she was chatting with us. And then we just gave her a few little instructions, basic instructions on tandem riding. One is that the pilot and the stoker both have to have their sort of right foot at 10 to 2 on the pedal, so you can sort of go 1, 2, 3. So she got on. She did seem a little bit apprehensive, so I tried to do my best to sort of calm her down. We had a bit of a false start to begin with, which was no surprise, because most people do have a little, you know, because it's apparently a very different feeling. So Countess was sort of standing up, and you can't really do that, because obviously as soon as I put my power from the back, it sort of unbalanced the bike. So we explained that, and then the second time we did 1, 2, 3 go, off we went, and we did a little tour of the grounds. As I said, the first round she was a bit nervous, but we went round and was just sort of giving her pointers. I was trying to sort of make her feel relaxed, which I think worked. And then we got back to the starting point, and she was like, "Phew!" and I thought, "Oh, I think for her sake, it would be a lot better if she had another go." So I persuaded her to have another go. It was much better. She was very relaxed. We went round, and she sort of even did some audio description of the grounds, of the arboretum, of the gardens.
I got a bit of a tour,
a bit of an audio description tour. Obviously, when I'm cycling, I can't see anything, so because I'm totally blind. But she was telling me about the arboretum and the trees and the beautiful gardens and that sort of thing. And then sort of we finished and we were explaining to her a little bit about how the event would go and she completely relaxed. So much so that the next day when we actually got to Bushy Park, unfortunately the heavens opened just as she arrived in her car, and we just thought, oh no. So we got an umbrella and we brought her under our gazebo, and so she was chatting with some of the other tandem riders, the other visually impaired tandem riders, because it was we had about 6 or 7 tandems, showing that, you know, working in tandem means that people can do things like sport and employment. And then luckily the rain stopped and the sun came out and we all got in the line, in the tandem line, myself and the Countess in the front, and the sort of 6 or 7 tandems behind. And we had an extremely smooth start. We just put our feet on the pedals and off we went, and she was much more relaxed. And we went around the park, and she was describing various things that were happening around the place, there was only one instant where she suddenly said, "Oh my goodness," and I said, "Oh no, oh no, don't worry about describing," and she said, no, "there's some massive stags with big horns."
Oh gosh.
And I'm a bit scared about going past them. I don't know what to do. And I at that stage, obviously I couldn't see how enormous these things were, but then we managed to we cycled past them, and she breathed a sigh of relief. And we did the whole cycle, and I think, you know, she was very relaxed, and it was really like cycling with a friend. I mean, I hadn't realized that, you know, it would be so relaxed. So yeah. Sorry, oh, I've talked a
fantastic.
Lot.
Fantastic. No, that's absolutely fine. It sounds like it was good fun, and it sounds like she did really well. I don't think I would be able to. I've never been on a tandem bike, but I don't think I'd have been successful to do it on what a go-to she managed to do it.
No, completely. As I said, a lot of people have this sort of trepidation about, oh my goodness, it's a bit strange, you've got somebody on the back, but no, she did fantastically well, even though she said that she was nervous inside. She did very well, and she very much engaged with the other riders, with the other visually impaired riders, and myself, understanding the link between tandem riding and employment. Because obviously she was the sighted rider, I was the visually impaired rider, but together we managed to cycle. And it's the same with employment. If sighted people just open their eyes, as it were, to just the small adaptations that are needed to employ a blind, partially sighted person, then people can work together and ensure that blind and partially sighted people can actually work. And she was completely engaged with the cause, completely understood the meaning behind the tandem event and the actual true purpose of the event.
Fantastic. And so who do you normally cycle with?
I've got a variety of front riders. I've got a couple of friends that live local to me who I ride with, and my partner, and I occasionally get my sort of young 20-year-old children to ride with me when they're not engaged in some other screen activity. But I tend to try and do 30 miles each weekend on a bike ride.
Oh wow. Oh, that's incredible. So,
yeah. And I've done a few charity bike rides as well. I've cycled the Nile for a charity, and I've taken part in a couple of I also did the London London bike ride. I can't remember what it's called. It's a big event that happens every August.
Yeah. Okay.
I've done that as well. It's 100 miles in a day. It's
That
was my hardest one, because it was a very hot day. But it was amazing, because we just cycled right through the middle of London, from Stratford right through London and out through Surrey and round, and finished up at the Mall. As I said, it was 100 miles in a day. And that was hard work, but good fun. But so, yeah, I cycling is one of my big sports.
And Monica, you'll be able to share more, but it was really interesting on the practice day. I think part of what made the Countess kind of nervous was that she felt really, really responsible. So she felt responsible for Monica. Yep. And very quickly realized that Monica was the confident, experienced person, and actually it was the other way around. And I think that was a really powerful kind of revelation of, who's kind of jointly looking after whom and all of that, and how it's really just teamwork. When she came back after that first ride, it was so fascinating. We said, do you want to go again? And she said,
absolutely
no,
not.
No way. And Monica sort of very gently said, well, maybe we should just do one more. And thank goodness, because she was completely different after the second ride. And it was similar. I was really lucky to join in the big tandem the next day, albeit despite some frightening rain, with one of our trustees, who's also a blind man, lost his sight completely 8 years ago, our amazing trustee, Dr. Amit Patel. And I was similar. I thought, oh gosh, I'm going to be responsible for Amit. And he was the power. I mean, I had so much fun. I've never gone so fast on a bike. Didn't really have to try. It's really, if any of your listeners ever get the opportunity to ride a tandem with a visually impaired person, or if they are visually impaired, to get on a tandem with a sighted person, there's not much actually that compares. It's a really amazing experience.
Brilliant. So you guys have obviously both had the opportunity to work closely with Sophie, both at events like the ride, where there are cameras and press and sometimes well wishes, but you also get to spend time with her behind the scenes in kind of, the normal real life of her doing charity work with you. So just to ask both of you separately then, how did you find her, how does she compare when the cameras aren't there to when she's got all eyes on her? Olivia, I don't know if you want to go first.
Sure. To be honest, I don't think she's very different. I was just reflecting, Monica. So when she had to take off, there was a pack of paparazzi, at that point, the starting point. So obviously they were all desperate for her to topple over, but she didn't. And she got round. And when we got to the end, again, the pack was back with the addition of a few video cameras. So she knew she was being filmed and photographed. And she must have stood up, my guess is 15, 20 minutes, Monica, just chatting to Monica, chatting to the other visually impaired people. I don't think she was editing, what she was saying. She was incredibly natural. And she even had a wonderful moment of really teasing our head of comms, who's somebody handed our head of communications a little tiny GoPro. So there were all these huge professional cameras, and then our head of comms with the world's smallest camera. And she said, mid-sentence, she spotted him and said, what happened there? How come that's the world's tiniest camera? And he said something like, you know, they don't trust me with a grown-up camera. And she teased him a bit. Then she turned to Monica, who she suddenly was conscious was no longer involved in the conversation because Monica couldn't see the camera. Took Monica's hand and said, his camera is this big, you know, and painted it on your hand.
And I actually drew the size of the camera on my hand. I mean, and that's obviously come completely from her heart. I'm sure nobody said to her, this is what you need to do to describe something to a blind, partially sighted person. And it just came straight from her heart.
It felt very, didn't it? It felt very human and normal.
Completely human, very natural.
I think it's stuff like that really shows her understanding of what you guys do and the charity and, you know, blindness generally, you know, making that connection and thinking about it on the spot to realise, which I think is fantastic and just shows how, as you said, passionate she is about it.
Definitely. I guess the only slight difference I saw, so when she stepped, so I can't really describe how heavy the rain was. At one point, it was you know, sheet rain and
blowing a gale as well.
So at one point, about 15 minutes before her arrival was due, two of my colleagues were holding down our gazebo. I mean, it was crazy. And she had driven through that. So although it had lifted a bit by the time she arrived, she got out of the car and just then looked at me and said, you know, we can't do this ride in this rain. And so that was the only moment where I was like, okay. And so I said, well, let's see what happens. And in that moment, she was obviously very concerned, but she turned it around. By the time she walked down to the gazebo to meet everyone, she was all smiles and it's all going to happen. So I guess there was just a little moment of like, this is madness. But yeah, she brushed that off. Definitely.
Because cycling in the rain is not fun, it just wouldn't have been the same. So,
definitely. But you are absolutely right, Zoe. I think she's worked with a huge number of charities for years and years, and has met so many phenomenal Paralympians, spokespeople, you know, real champions from the sightless community. So I do think her understanding is kind of innate and quite instinctive. But I think what she didn't realise was just how excluded people were. And because she's had so much contact with blind and partially sighted people, she realises how absurd and unnecessary that exclusion is, but a lot of people don't. So as Monica said, 90% of people with the most severe sight loss are currently unemployed. Those are people of working age. So our back of the envelope kind of calculation on that means that we've got about 300,000 people who are currently excluded from the workplace, sitting at home, their talents, their potential wasted. And as someone who works with quite a number of blind and partially sighted people and also answers to a number of blind and partially sighted people on my board of trustees, that statistic is just so unacceptable to me. And I think, so those statistics are what we're really about. We know that 90% of employers think that it would be difficult or impossible to employ a blind or partially sighted person. And as an employer, we know that it's both easy and advantageous. So I think there's a huge gap between people's perceptions of what's possible and what's real. And to be honest, I think what too many sighted people do when they ask, you know, we asked 2,000 people if a blind person could do your job, and 94% said no. And I think what sighted people do is they sit there with their paper in front of them, their computer screen, they think about their commute, and they close their eyes and they go, could I do all of that if I closed my eyes? And obviously that's not the same at all. Humans are incredibly adaptable, amazingly flexible and agile, and learn new ways of doing things as the pandemic has shown, learn so quickly. But if your assumption is, oh, it's just me with my eyes closed, you don't realize what's possible. In fact, you know, Monica, you could talk about all of the amazing equipment and tech and actually how easy it is to do your job.
Yep, I mean, as I said, I went to university, did a degree, used something called a closed circuit television, which you put the book underneath and it comes out bigger on the screen. And then when in my 20s, I lost the rest of my residual vision, and technology started to flourish at that stage. And I've got a speech package called JAWS, which reads everything out on the screen. So as I'm typing, it's reading everything out. And as I read, and I just press the down arrow and it reads emails, and I've held a job down now for the last 15 years. And it is a bit of education for the general public, for employers, just to say, you know, don't count us as, you know, unable to work. We've got the skills, and we're actually more adaptable. We're more flexible. We're more problem solving, because every day in life, from getting out of bed till you go to bed, that you've got to get around things. You can't do things naturally, and you have to find solutions around things, from just simple things like I have my beans, tins of beans on the left and my chopped tomatoes on the right, so I don't muddle those up. I mean, just simple little solutions like that, all the way through to, so you know, how to get to work, how to commute on a train, and how to ask for assistance. But it's all doable, and as I've proved it, David Blunkett's proved it, and most of my colleagues on the tandem I've approved it. It is possible, and we just need to we need to get the message out there to employers that you know, please don't dismiss visually impaired talent, because it's all solvable. And it's an easy fix as well. I mean, you don't have to start building ramps or putting in lifts. I mean, it's just buying equipment and making your premises, you know, VI friendly.
It's so interesting to hear how much technology is out there. And as you said, I just don't think many people know about it. So thank you so much for going over everything with us today. The one last thing then quickly. So if anyone wants to find out any more about the Vision Foundation, how do they do that? What's your website?
So our website is visionfoundation.org.uk, and we're 100 years old, but we're kind of the best kept secret, and actually we want to be much, much bigger than that. So, you know, we'd love people to visit the website, sign up for our newsletter. We don't get any government funding at all, so we completely rely on the generosity of the public. So definitely visit the website if you like what you see, think about contributing, and if you've got any old clothes that no longer fit after lockdown, either because you've been too much at home and sitting around, or because you've been too much in the gym, we've got a sea of charity shops as well across London, so we're desperate for donations for those too.
Fantastic, lovely. Well, thank you so much for joining me. It was lovely to chat to you both.
Great to speak with you too.
Thanks so much.
And for our podcast listeners, and Anne and Russell are back next week with all the royal news that you've missed over the summer. Until then.
God save the Queen!